Good morning. So the subject of my sharing this morning is stay in God's story, or staying in God's story. And I hope to give you a biblical example of that and also a personal example of that. And I guess really what I'm sharing today is a culmination of a number of preachers we've had over the last few weeks as we look to obey God and move out of our church home and follow a sort of refocused go to make disciples. We're probably both excited and trepidatious over the new. And particularly at the moment as we're sort of waiting, hopefully expectantly, but waiting nonetheless, until we start to meet together with Waterbrook in January as our first step in playing our part in fulfilling God's purposes. And I guess also it's true to say that we're waiting for details. We perhaps don't have as much information as we would like. What's the service going to look like? Who's going to stand at the front? Will I be standing at the front? What will I be doing? When I say I don't mean me. I meant whoever's going to be standing at the front. More importantly, and perhaps more on my heart, will there be cake? I just don't know. And we don't like not knowing. And these sort of changes, they either excite us or they disturb us. And what I wanted to do was just spend a little bit of time thinking about the mission. So I want to share this morning is the importance of capturing and engaging in the mission. And now that helps frame what we do and how we think about change. Well, I'm going to have a go at that at least. So the first thing I want to talk about is the mission, capturing the mission. So let me just read this out. So this is the mission for the well. This is the partnership between ourselves and Waterbrook, and this is our stated mission. We believe that Jesus has given us the great command to love God and love others with all our hearts. And the great commission to go and make disciples. Therefore, we are a people who are like the apprentices of Jesus, learning from him, doing life with him, and doing life like him. The well builds on both churches' independent identities, being rooted in inspiration from, but whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again. The water that I will give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life. And that's from John 4, verse 14, which is about the Samaritan woman and the encounter at the well. And in many respects, this vision has been formed by true collaboration. These are all suggested by and framed by Luke, but it feels very, and of course based on the Bible, based on the Lord's commission, we recognise that. But also in framing the name, certainly for me and many others in New Life Church, that really did resonate further with us, that, you know, this was of God, because that was just how we saw church to be, a place to encounter Jesus, just like the woman did in the story of the Samaritan woman. So this is a different slide. So this is what I hope will demonstrate why mission is important. So let me just explain the picture. So what you've got over here is a task, laying bricks. Okay, that's a task. Then you've got a goal, which is I'm building a wall. So you lay the bricks, it creates a wall. And then actually you've got the third person saying, I'm creating a cathedral. They're doing the same thing. They're laying bricks, but they're not thinking I'm just laying bricks. They're not just thinking I'm building a wall. What they're thinking is I'm creating a cathedral, and it's a mission. If I use some examples, some construction examples in the church, you've got Dave, who is in development of housing. You've got, where is he, Ian? Thank you, Ian. Looking after capital program to build new schools. And I haven't spoken to them, but you know what? I guess they're not that interested in the bricks and mortar. I'm not sure they're particularly interested that much in the building. What they're interested in is what that does. You know, Dave will wax lyrical about the provision of affordable housing. in areas and the need to create more affordable housing because we don't have enough. And Ian is passionate about creating fantastic learning places for kids so that kids can develop their learning. They're in the mission in their jobs. That's how they frame it. And many of you, sorry, I've just used those two examples because that's bricks and mortar stuff. Many of you will also be in jobs where you can say, oh yeah, I'm not just doing that. I'm contributing to something much bigger. But I just wanted to I better read out what I've written. I do like this picture because I have slightly adapted it, but I'm seeking you to understand the perspective of a bricklayer. Is she just laying bricks? Is she just building a wall? Or is she involved in something much, much bigger, much, much more purposeful? And you might remember when Luke shared from Ezra the story of the laying of the temple foundation in Ezra 3, and the reaction of the people. They were so happy. Some were shouting, some were crying, but there was a great big excitement about a task they'd finished. They hadn't built a temple at all. They'd built the foundations. They had just finished. Maybe a goal, you know, but it wasn't the great thing. But they got excited about that. But they were on their way, and they were on a mission, and it took them another 20 years to finish that temple because they started to hit resistance. But because they were on that mission, they were able to focus on the mission and they were able to persist until it was achieved. The vision. I want to talk a little bit about story. So this was a quote that was recently shared with me. I can only answer the question, what am I to do? If I can answer the first question of what story do I find myself part of, or what story do I want to be part of? So when we're facing change, aren't we? Sometimes think about, what am I supposed to do? You can't really answer that question until you find out, what does God want you to do? What's God's story? Where am I in God's story? I'm going to give you a personal illustration of this. I'm going to try to do it evenly. By that I mean by not getting too emotional about it. Sometimes I get a little emotional. Thank you. So Louise and I have been foster carers for 17 years. We like to think we've finished, but we haven't. We have strictly finished being foster carers, but we are still going. But we started fostering way back in 2008. Now, Louise will have her own story about why she went into fostering. And mine is a little bit more than because she did, I did. But effectively, Louise is the driving force around our fostering. But I do have my own reasons for doing it. We have our separate reasons, I think. Now, I used to work in local government, and I worked in local government for many, many years in finance. So I've always been interested in where we spend money. And local authorities spend an awful lot of money on foster children. Sue is nodding furiously. Very big budget. So as a person responsible for finance, I was always interested in looked after children. But from a financial point of view, where's this all money going? What's this money for? So I got into understanding the statistics around looked after children. And I remember, and I do remember, it was probably in 2006... where I sat down with a group of people and they shared some statistics around looked after children. And there was one that sat me on my bottom, to use that phrase, as soon as I heard it. And it was, and I can't remember the exact statistic, but a huge percentage of children approaching leaving care said they had no hope. They had no hope. A more precise, updated statistic is a fifth of care leavers do not feel that they have anything in their life that is worthwhile. And a similar percentage feel lonely always or almost most of the time. Here's another statistic. The average number of placements over a childhood of a looked after child is likely to be 3. And children with behavioural needs, will be higher. 37% of siblings are separated when placed in foster care. Approximately 50% of 24-year-olds still live at home. What a blessing for you that have got children. These have got nothing to do with looked after children. These are just your average child. On average, 50% of 24-year-olds still live at home. Whereas a high percentage of children in care leave home between 16 and 18 years with very few loving relationships in their lives. Now, quite simply, without making too much of a fuss about it, when I heard that, it broke my heart. So we decided to go to fostering, not because I could fix the system, couldn't fix the system, but maybe we could rescue some kids. So when on that fateful day, it was actual April Fool's Day, in 2008, we took an emergency placement of two boys, Dennis 4 and Alfie 3, and Charlie, their brother, was 18 months, couldn't stay. Well, they came to the house, climbed our furniture. So Lou and I went on a mission. We determined it was going to be different for these boys. And every action, battle, advocacy, and care we provided was always carried out in the context of that mission. If we'd been doing a job, carrying out a task, or a short-term goal, we would have given up long ago. Now, many of you know that this is not plain sailing, hasn't been plain sailing, currently isn't plain sailing, and anyone who's been in foster care, and there are a few of you here, you know, you can't guarantee any outcomes. It's just not possible. There are just too many moving parts, and you're dealing with very traumatised children with lots of baggage. But we did try and achieve our mission. We did want to make sure that we kept a family together. We did want to make sure they didn't move around. We did want to make sure when they left care that they had some loving relationships. So they are now 20... Oh, I should show you a picture, shouldn't I? What fine specimens. I have to protect their anonymity, but fine specimens. There you go. So, on any given day of the week, you might find that collection of humans in our house. They're now 22, 20 and 19. And I look forward to sitting down with them at Christmas. For Christmas dinner. I'll probably quite like it when they go afterwards. But I guess what I'm saying is that they are at the family table. These are our boys. They still see their natural parents, but they are our boys. And I believe that we were able to do that through the grace of God, who held us and them through that period. But it's all about the mission. Aligned with that is the second part of a third part of what I wanted to say is you have to be stirred. I hope I've demonstrated, and I'm trying, you know, I've got past it now, so I'm all right, but I hope I have demonstrated that it stirred me. And it stirs Lou. We get upset. You know, this mission was important. It's stirred. And it's important that you allow your hearts to be broken for the things that matter. And that is difficult to do. It's difficult to do. So we have to allow our hearts to be broken for the things that break God's heart. And it hurts. And I think that can drive you either in one or two directions. I think you just get stirred up about it enough and you do something, you're upset enough to do something about it. Or you guard your heart. And maybe that's more of a bloke thing, and apologies if it isn't. But we, you know, sometimes you can put things and compartmentalise them. But it is difficult because there's a lot of stuff in the world you could get stirred up about, and I'm not sure we've got the capacity. We certainly haven't got God's capacity. But you must allow yourself to feel what God feels, to feel that hurt. And I guess my point is that if God's heart is breaking for the lost in the world, I challenge myself and you, are we appropriately stirred? Are we appropriately hurting for the lost? It says in Ezekiel 36, verse 26, I will give you a new heart and a new spirit I will put within you, and I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. I'm sorry you've got to still look at those, but I haven't got another slide for a minute. The fourth point is persistence. So I'd like to look at a story in Genesis, and it's in Genesis 26, verses 12. Yeah, we've moved on. And Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year hundredfold. The Lord blessed him. The man became rich and gained more and more until he became very wealthy. He had possession of flocks and herds and many servants. So the Philistines envied him. Now the Philistines had stopped and filled with earth all the wells that his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham his father. And Abimelech said to Isaac, "Go away from us, for you are much mightier than we." So Isaac departed from there and encamped in the valley of Gerar and settled there. Let me just find out when that finishes. Hang on. So Isaac departed from there and encamped in the valley of Gerar and settled there. And Isaac dug again the wells of the water that were dug in the days of Abraham, his father, which the Philistines had stopped after the death of Abraham. And he gave them the names that his father had given them. But when Isaac's servants dug in the valley and found there a well of spring water, the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with Isaac's herdsmen, saying, "The water is ours." So he called the name of the well Ezek, because they contended with him. Then they dug another well, and they quarreled over that also. So he called that name Sitna. And he moved from there and dug another well, and they did not quarrel over that one. So he called its name Rehoboth, saying, "For now the Lord has made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land." From there he went to Beersheba, and the Lord appeared to him the same night and said, "I am the God of Abraham, your father. Fear not, for I am with you and will bless you and multiply you, your offspring, for my servant Abraham's sake." So he built an altar there and called upon the name of the Lord and pitched his tent there. And there Isaac's servants dug a well. When Abimelech came from Gerar with Ahazioth, and I like to call the other one Psycho, but it's not, is it? It's Fico. But I like the idea he was the commander of the army and maybe looked a bit brutal. Don't know. Isaac said to them, "Why have you come to me, seeing that you hate me and you've sent me away from you?" They said, "We see plainly that the Lord has been with you." So he said, "Let there be a sworn pact between us, between you and us, and let us make a covenant with you, that you will do us no harm, just as we have not touched you and have done nothing but good and have sent you away in peace. You are now blessed of the Lord." So he made them a feast, and they ate and drank. And in the morning they rose early and exchanged oaths, and Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. That same day Isaac's servants came and told him about the well they had dug, and said to him, "We have found water." He called it Sheba. Therefore the name of Beersheba is called Beersheba to this day. So to get the context, Isaac was blessed by God and he received the same covenant promise that Abraham received, that he would be a great nation and was currently being blessed with possessions and flocks to the point he was literally outgrown his welcome. But the problem with having large flocks of animals and an entourage of people is that he needed water, which is why digging of wells was so important. So sensibly, Isaac revisited those locations. Abraham dug wells so he could unstop them. Then he would have a ready supply of water. Good plan. But of course, they keep moving on. And as they move on, they have success in digging wells and finding the water at the next two. But they were contested, so they had to move on. They had to leave them, move on again. The third well they dug was also successful and uncontested, so they called it Rehoboth, which means spacious place. "For the Lord had made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land." We then see King Abimelech, arriving to cover his backside, having sent Isaac away, he now worries that Isaac continues to be blessed and grow in number. He may become a threat. So he effectively seeks out peace between them to ensure their relations remain peaceful. That's the story. I've explained the story. Meanwhile, the well diggers, as is their way, think, oh, we've stopped, so we better dig a well. So it made me thinking about the well diggers. Now, I don't know what the success rate for a well digger was, but these guys were pretty successful. Wherever they dug, we think, they found water. But I don't know how much pressure they were on. But they were under the promises of God because they were with Isaac. They were on God's journey. So they were successful in their well digging. I kept thinking about the well diggers. What were they like? And spare a thought for them, because we read this story, don't we? And you think, oh, they dug a well on Monday, they dug a well on Tuesday, they dug a well on Wednesday. It probably took weeks, if not months, to dig a well. They didn't have any machinery. In reality, they were probably about 45 to 50 feet deep, just to give you some idea. So try and just think about that story in those terms. So they move on. How do you think the well diggers felt? I don't know if I might think, could we just stay for a little longer, please? Otherwise, I'm going to have to dig another well. Or maybe they loved digging wells. I don't know. Were they unionized? I have no idea. Were they grumpy? Were they a grumpy bunch or a joyous bunch? Every time they moved, they knew they would have to dig another well. Maybe they loved it. Maybe they thought they were born to be well diggers. Who knows? You can make your own mind up. I'm making this up. Make it up yourselves. But what I can tell you, it was hard and persistent work. So my last point is about persistence. You read these stories, sometimes you can skirt over the effort involved. These guys were persistent. They hit rock, they hit problems, they had to keep going. They couldn't just say, oh, we've gone down 10 feet, where's the water? They went down until they found the water. It was persistent work. Good, coming into land. Recap. So, first point, capture the vision. Understand the vision. What is that vision? Be stirred and moved for the vision. Don't just read the words. And actually, that comes into the fourth point. So I've done this in the wrong order, but I'll do the fourth point now. Sometimes you read stuff and it doesn't do it for you. You just think, oh, it's just words. Reframe it. What does it mean to you? I'm going to go to a church and I'm going to get involved in getting people born again. So I just make it up. Make your own up. Reframe it. What is it that you can makes better sense for you in the overall vision? Make it your own. In your head, just think, oh, it's a banner. I'll make a banner in my head of what it is. But that is the mission. And be stirred and moved for the vision, for the mission. Also focus and pray into the mission. Test everything against that priority. Go back to that fostering things. There's loads of things Louise and I didn't do during that period we were fostering. Smile was one of them. But we made decisions around holidays and all sorts of other things because everything was tested in the priority of that mission. It was the most important thing we were doing. And persist. Stay in God's story. This is what the Lord has for us. Stay in the story. Thank you.